my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Are we live right now? I'm feeling good. What's going on, everybody? And welcome back to another edition, another installment, a new episode of our Black Women Win series in celebration of Black of Women's History Month. But let me just say Black Women's History Month. You feel me? In celebration of Women's History Month, our Black Men Win podcast is presenting our Black Women Win series, our third annual Black Women Win series. Doing this again for a third time. Third time go around has been amazing. Just to get to know, interview, and you can say sit and talk with and just conversate with these amazing Black women on just their lives and how they impact each sector of their profession and otherwise is amazing. So y'all make sure y'all tap into every interview that we're dropping, whether it be this interview or interviews past. Listen, go tap in right now. You feel what I'm saying? Because we love that you guys love us. And thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for watching, because I be looking at the numbers. You feel what I'm saying? I be looking. I be appreciating too. So I thank y'all so much. Listen, I'm super excited for this interview today. I call her a mentor from afar, a friend up close and personal. You feel what I'm saying? Educator, writer, author, so many hats, award-winning podcaster, producer, and the leading lady, right, of the Black Women Stitch podcast and Black Women Stitch period. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, aunties and uncles, put your hands together for my good friend, Miss Lisa Wolford. Miss Lisa,
thank you.
How are you?
I am even better now. I was good before, and now I'm better. Your robust introduction, the air horn was just the right.
That was the right one. See, listen, I couldn't. You see, first of all, before I give Lisa the space and opportunity to introduce herself properly, right? I want to say, me and Lisa have met through the C4, right? Shout out to the content creators of color. We love y'all. We met through that group, and I'm telling y'all, every person that I meet through this amazing family, because we're not just a community anymore. I think we're way past that now, right? I think it's like we're just a little niche little family, right? Lisa was just somebody that I just gravitated to early, right? We just clicked. It was just like big sister, little brother energy. Like, it was that, you know what I'm saying? Friend energy. And she's amazing. Her light literally shines. When I say a person's light, I can say walk into a clubhouse room, right? But just walk into a room. She's amazing. Her light shines so bright. So let me shut up and I'm gonna allow Miss Lisa to formally introduce herself and tell the people who you are.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much, Ty, for that gorgeous introduction and for welcoming me with the right amount of air horns. My name is Lisa Woolfork. I am a professor / scholar specializing in African-American literature and culture. And I believe I am here today, not so much about that, about the jobby job, as much as it is about my role as the founder of Black Women Stitch and the creator and host of Stitch Please, which is a weekly audio podcast that centers Black women, girls, and femmes in sewing. I have been doing this sewing podcast since September of 2019. Every week, we have over 200 episodes of the show because I have been going every week, and we talk with some amazing creatives as well as talk about sewing and certain sewing projects and the animating philosophy behind the Stitch Please podcast includes the belief that freedom isn't a secret, it is a practice. This comes from Alexis Pauline Gums, who is a scholar and a poet and just amazing human. And she believes that freedom isn't a secret, it is a practice. And on the Stitch Please podcast, I believe that we see sewing in the hands of Black women as a form of creative liberation, that the sewing, the stitching is the practice that allows us to mitigate systems of harm, that allows us to have the things that society might say we cannot have, and to express and luxuriate in a tactile needlework and textile tradition that is very old and that Black people have been practicing around the world for hundreds of years. So the Stitch Please podcast is the weekly podcast where we help you get your stitch together. And I invite y'all to check it out because we've got lots of great, great fun episodes. Even if you don't sew, there'll be something there for you because we get to think about how things are made and a lot of choices around design and Black joy, which is also one of the bedrocks of the show, is that there's a lot of folks who love sewing. And I am very grateful that they have chosen or agreed to come and talk with me on the Stitch Please podcast for more than 200 episodes.
Well, first of all, I my apologies, Stitch Please podcast. My apologies for, I think, what did I say? Black Woman Stitch podcast. I do apologize.
Stitch Please is the official podcast of Black Women Stitch.
Right. It's right.
So it's totally reasonable to say that.
But it's
what it is.
But Lisa, in researching you, almost 50,000 people, like, I don't want to say community, because I believe you've cultivated a kind of niche family in terms of Black women's stitch. And followers, you know, in these day and ages, followers is a count, right? For me, I think I look at your kind of social media as now kind of, in a sense, community-based. How do you present your product, service to the community that you're trying to build, or, again, that niche family that you're trying to build as well? And from the moment that you follow Black Woman Stitch, whether you're a Black man, Black woman, doesn't matter, whether, again, that you're sewed or you don't know about a needle and thread, you may not have an inkling of anything. I think the way you have just engaged and built this community from the ground up, and I say 50,000, nearly 50,000, with really just like that's a huge number to think about. Like, people think about 200 episodes with a podcast and still going, that's cake. It's not. Right? I just want to let people know it's not.
I would love some cake. Cake is not off.
But it's not, right? It's not cake. And I want people to look at Lisa's background for a minute, right? I want people to look at Lisa's background. And I want you to think about, is this really a virtual background or is this her actual space? No, this is her actual space, right? And I've seen I've seen Lisa's background multiple times to know that it's the background. It, you guys see that this is an active student. This is something that she does. Enjoyment, living, like just doing, and created a community. I have so many questions around Black Woman Stitch that I'll get to in the later part of the show. However, I want to start off about where you started your roots from, and how education was so important to you growing up.
I thank you for that question. Education was always important for me growing up because I was an early adopter of what we now call blurreds. Blurreds, if y'all might not know, are Black nerds. And I was a Black nerd from the very beginning. There is a little poster over there that my mother saved from me when I was 6 years old, and I had written, "Today is a very lovely day. The sun is shining. Everyone is at school." That was apparently what I would consider an ideal time as a six-year-old, is that to have a happy, sunny day and everyone is at school. That's how much I love school. Like, I used to beg to go to summer school in the summer because I hated camp because it was outside, hot and sticky. And who would choose to go to summer camp over going to school? I would. Me, Lisa. I loved it. In school, it was air conditioned and you get to do word problems. And at camp, you had to go outside and play with other kids in the hot ass sun. And I hated that. So I got to stay indoors. I had to read. I was a voracious reader. I was very precocious as a child. My mother tells the story of I was about 2 years old, and she had leaned down to me and she had said, "Lisa, why do we argue so much? Why do we bump heads so much?" Mm-hmm. And I said to her, "Cause I's bossy and you's bossy."
Yeah, you did not say it like that.
I's boss. I was two, and my grandma was not right there. I's bossy and you's bossy.
Did she laugh?
She did.
She had to laugh because you have to laugh at that.
When a 2 year old tells you that, your only response is to laugh. This is not the time you teach them about how to respect adults and children should be seen and not heard. My mother was a teacher. She taught fourth grade for almost my entire life. She taught She taught almost 40 years in elementary school. So she was never the type of mother that was like, she was deaf compared to some of her other friends who had more of the, "You will yes, ma'am, no, ma'am," and run the house like it's some kind of like micro military. Mm-hmm. We were not permitted to be disrespectful. Disrespect was never tolerated, but she never considered legitimate questions and curiosity disrespect. Okay. She trained us to be curious, but also to care well for one another. We all have a very different relationship to school. I loved it. I always felt seen and cared for there. I went to Black schools for elementary, predominantly Black, same thing for high school. Mm-hmm. And that meant that I was in the same kind of segregated environment that my parents were in, which was great for me because that meant that my teachers were people who were friends with my parents.
Right.
And so my early education was very warm. The kids, I was bullied because kids are assholes. But in terms of the instruction, I definitely got to really enjoy reading, enjoy the library, enjoy books, like loving books. And this is the reason why of my three sisters, I am currently the lowest paid. Because I chose to be good at literature and reading, and they chose to be good at things like marketing, science, anesthesia, etc. Oh, wow. They're really talented. Nice. I, as I said earlier, am skilled at reading. I am not skilled at the other things that get you more money than reading. But I do have a great deal of satisfaction. Knowledge.
That is huge.
It's priceless. It's priceless. Exactly. It's precious. It's also priceless because people ain't gonna pay you for it.
That's a fact. That is a that is a fact. So you you keep reading, Lisa. That is your superpower. How about that?
I love it. I love it. I'm not complaining. I'm really grateful. I feel really grateful to be an English professor as my job. Mm-hmm. That the idea that I grew up as a bookish kid and now my actual job is reading and helping people also develop great skills for reading and analysis. Like right. And also at the college level, I don't have to listen to nobody's mama. I don't have to be on the phone with nobody. It's very, it's a wonderful job. Right. It's a wonderful job. I feel fortunate. And education also, however, is not the only way that people can grow and learn things.
Right.
I'm actually teaching a course right now that talks about how we learn beyond education and how education is one mode of study and how we figure things out. But there's also other ways. There's so much self-study and guidance and reading and study groups and all of this stuff that can kind of happen. So I think that education is, of course, something that's vital and important. And there's lots of ways to be educated. And also education is not the only way to learn something.
Right. Now that's a fact, because Biden ain't paying my student loans back. You hear what I'm saying?
Listen to me.
He need to hurry up.
And it's also, it's really violent, you know, I was able. No. I'm telling you, like, we are on like a 30-year, we're on a loan repayment plan that is almost as long as our mortgage. I graduated in the year 2000 with a PhD. Mm-hmm. We had my loans paid off maybe 16 years later.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't even have that many. And my spouse got their last bit forgiven because of the work that they do in public service after maybe 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's too long. It's appalling. It is appalling when we think about all the money that we've paid to Sally Mae that we could use to invest in our own family and building intergenerational wealth for our kids.
I think that's a perfect segue to my next question for you, because you are in education. And I think because you've been in it so long, I think you're one of the perfect people for me to ask this question. As we talked about off mic, my girlfriend is a first grade teacher.
First grade.
Right.
Thank her for that. Thank you. First graders,
literally, she's amazing. All girls too, all girls school.
Love it. I love girls education. I love that.
And that's her. From what I've gotten to know about her, that is definitely one of her passions. Is not only to teach, but to teach girls,
yes.
Right? Specifically Black and Brown girls.
Yes.
Can you specifically talk to the pay disparity when it comes to our teachers in every sector, right?
Yes.
Because as me and her has had conversations about, you know, charter versus public school pay, and then just me knowing the college side a little bit more, right? The levels there is to pay that pay scale as well. Can you just talk to the why teachers just don't get that? You know,
yes, I absolutely can. This is why. It's because America is a country that gives more lip service to respecting education than they give resources. America is a country that says it prides itself on education, but no one that prides itself on education would underpay its teachers. Teachers have long been underpaid, and as we move through the last 20 years, they have been even more so underpaid. Their wages have been deeply compressed, and their salaries have been compressed, so much so that I know a young woman who used to teach art at a public school and had a very difficult time with classroom management, very difficult time dealing with the students that she was teaching, and not getting any support from administration, which basically made the job that was difficult nearly impossible. And she ended up quitting toward the end of the school year. And now she's back with at a job where she's making far more money than being a teacher, and with a more reliable sense of support from the her new employer. Do you know what she does? She is a waitress. She left teaching so she could go.
Wait, whoa. Okay, hold on. Okay. For those of you who are listening right now, and for those of you who may be watching, we are on Lisa's Live right now, okay? So I just want to, in real time, right? I just want to take a time out. Wait, what? Hold on. Teacher. And how long was she teaching for?
I think she might have been there 2 years, maybe.
2 years? And you're...
This person has a master's degree. They have a master's degree.
No! My chest. I have the same. My chest. Oh, and you're telling me she went to go back to be a note.
Yes. For more money and
more
less stress.
Money? So you're telling me. Wait. Oh, Lord. See. I'm acting a fool. Waitressing.
I'm mind blown.
Hold on. Because y'all got to give me a minute. Waitressing.
Listen, I might tell you a story, but I ain't going to never tell you a lie.
Waitressing?
Yep. Yes.
Is making more money than teachers?
Yes. Absolutely, yes.
Being a waiter or a waitress? Oh, yes. My gosh.
This is not to say that service jobs are bad jobs. No. I'm not trying to say, waitress. That's not it at all. What I'm saying is we say we care and respect these professions.
Yes.
But we really do not. It's hard to say. And this is so, I'm so glad you're talking about this in the context of Women's History Month and the Black Women Win series, is because it makes me wonder, why is it that this job is so disrespected? And I believe it's because it's a predominantly women field. I believe that if the teaching field were more male dominated, it would have people would have more money. Mm-hmm. People will have more support. We see in the chat, someone's mentioning teachers and others in professions that fall in the nurturing caregiving category are filled by women. And society will not ever pay women decent salaries.
I agree.
Believe that it's sadly true. I absolutely believe that. And it used to be a time when, and even this is funny too, when we think about the social capital, social cachet, who counts for more? Who do we look up to and revere? Doctors, lawyers, bankers used to be part of it. People say teachers, but name me one teacher that is paid like a doctor, lawyer, or a banker.
I can't name you one.
We have teachers that are not even being paid the same degree as I mentioned earlier, waiters, wait staff. Now, I'm not trying to look down on wait staff. I think that people should be paid for the work that they do. That is a hard job.
I was in the service industry for a while. That's why I'm so shocked. I think that's why the shock is on my face, is because I knew what I made in the service industry during that time.
Right. And this is the danger. This is why I believe, in the same way that costs for college have skyrocketed to unrealistic levels. And I can tell y'all, they are not giving that money to the professors. When it comes to pay and equity at an institution, the two highest positions, usually the highest paid position, especially if you're at a D1 school, will be your football coach. The football coach will make money.
Nope, that's a fact. The coach,
tends to make money than the college president.
Yeah. Because they're bringing in
That's what they say. Mm-hmm. That's what they say.
That's what they say. Right? That's what they say. I ain't say that. That's what they said.
That's what they say, right? Who's really bringing in the money is the student athletes that are doing all the work
right.
for free.
No, you're right.
But you have to somehow get in trouble if they accept, you know, an Egg McMuffin from a donor, you know? Yeah, they can make billions of dollars off their image and likeness, but they can't give the kids no doggone McDonald's cheeseburgers for fear of, you know, that being bribery or whatever the hell. So I think that we give a lot of lip service to education and to caring about education and caring about what it means to lead the future. Mm-hmm. But we know good and well, and places like Alabama has shown us this, that they really care more about the image
right.
than they do about the reality.
Yes.
The idea right now, for example, that there are thousands and thousands of eggs, fertilized eggs in vitro fertilization that these people, Alabama, has called children. Mm-hmm. And as such, they are going to take these away from the, I'm just saying, we be full of shit sometimes, and America be full of shit sometimes. And the biggest example, one of the big examples of them, is one of the biggest examples of them is the way that we talk about teachers. We praise teachers, but we also hate them. Yes. You know, like if you go on teacher talk or teacher TikTok or teacher Instagram or teacher social media, you hear stories all the time about the way that parents think of their teachers as if they're daycare workers. Mm. And that, you know, that their child is meant to be there the whole day and that the responsibility for their children's learning falls on the teacher instead of on the child. People just pay a lot of lip service to it. They really don't like it like that. They really don't. Because if we did, our money in this country would be distributed differently.
That is a fact.
I have heard it said that budgets are moral documents. Mm. Budgets are moral documents. So when you look at a city's budget, where is it allocating the resources?
Where is it allocating its resources to, right? I watch a lot of Abbott.
Okay? I love the show. It's so good.
I completely love Abbott Elementary, right? And low-key, I think the last episode for me, I think if you really watch the episode, it really just highlighted some to what you and to that last part you said, for real, that the allocation of funds. You could have seen on Abbott Elementary how he was like, listen, if it's free, it's for me, right? It's for us. You know, we can't sit here. We don't have no money, you know, but if it's free. So it's just like, okay, so y'all are asking for the funds, where the funds are going. As you said, on a college level, the highest paid person on the college level is the coach, right? And because that the sports division or the primarily, whether it's football or basketball or both, are bringing in the, as me and Lisa say, quote unquote, the most money. Right.
Yeah.
As for who? As they say. Right.
Yeah. But where is it going? Like, I don't believe that. Honestly.
Back to the facilities. Not your facilities.
Right. Exactly.
not your facilities. Right. Because I don't think they look at it that way. I think they look at it as, oh, we made this money and it comes back to mostly our division and whatever facilities we kind of want to give out to. I think, you know what, Ms. Lee, I had this since I was in college, since 2012. I've had this in my mind. I was like, it's funny because I wonder if like there are contracts signed and I ain't trying to get into nobody in trouble. But I just wonder if there are contracts signed in place where they have it to where the head of the sports, whatever, whoever's the head of the sports or whatever. Right. The director of athletics. Thank you, Jesus Christ, because I couldn't speak for nothing. The director of athletics and the president of the university have a conversation. Right. I've always had that in my mind. I went to a Division II college, and we were, quote unquote, the winningest football team in Division II.
Awesome.
So we're bringing in massive Division II and potential Division I recruits to our school. So we're bringing in good enough, you know, we bringing in some revenue.
You got so talent.
I've always had that question of, hey, where is that money being allocated to? Right? Where is that money going? Is it just going to y'all? Right? Is it just going to athletic department? Which, I mean, soccer, because we had a pretty good soccer team, right? Our soccer team was very, you know, really good. Our basketball team was, you know, but I mean, you know, you do with that what you will, you know, but football team was the main attraction, and I think that's what brought in the most money. We had have a great medical program and everything like that. But point, Lisa, like, I think I really do be having a question, like, do y'all be signing contracts into where money can be allocated towards on a campus level, not on a state level, right? Not on a local level, right? Not what we're hearing, but like on a campus level.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that this is how I think that one of the things about a public university is that you get to see what that information is.
Right.
We get to see, like, for example, the athletic director doesn't make more than the football coach or the president.
That's a fact.
You know, and so I think it's worth thinking about that. And I guess if we think about money beyond the transactional property of it. Mm-hmm. If we think about money as energy, if we think about money as a resource we direct, that whatever is as a form of attention, we can see that we tend to look up to those professions that we believe are lucrative. So even if a teacher makes less money than a waitress, we will think that the teacher has the more respectable, valuable position. And this, I think, is where we get stuck in terms of what is really happening,
right,
and some true transparency. I think that it happens around that. There's a comment that says that I'm talking about the one boy who plays college football and doesn't believe in space.
Right, yeah. That's people that
are coming back. I'm like, what next? Smallpox? What is wrong with y'all?
Yeah.
Like, let's break all the old stuff. How about that bubonic plague? You know? I'm telling you, there's a lot of anti-vaxxers out there who have totally brought back measles. Like,
oh wow.
These are preventable things that we used to prevent, but then people started to get down.
I mean, well, think about this, Lisa. Like, we had to tell the country. And this is
to wash their hands.
2020. That's the year I graduated with my master's degree.
The poster. I still see posters in the bathroom.
I'm
like, yo, if you need a poster in the bathroom, you are not washing your hands well, period. You just don't do it.
That's what I'm saying. What are we doing? I said, hold on. The pandemic happened a month literally before I got my degree, my master's degree. Right. I did not walk across stage. It was online, right? I was the first. That year, us graduates were the first online graduation, pandemic graduation.
It was
terrible. It was so terrible. It was so terrible. But shout out to my friends because they came through and they gave me a great graduation party. It was amazing. Here's the thing, though. That pandemic in that moment was so crazy that I'm sitting there like, all right, a month literally before, it's not a graduation, it, we're locked in, right? Yes. And
yes.
What do I do? You know, my university was about to kick me out. Out of my dorm room. They was like, y'all got to go.
No way. Seriously.
I had to go stay with a couple of friends for like 2 weeks.
Oh, that's right. They shut the residence halls down
residence halls down for like at least 2 weeks. I had to go stay with friends for like 2 weeks.
Wow. They sent everybody back. They had no residence life. They sent all the undergraduates back home.
Yes.
Everybody, foreign students.
2020.
Everybody
was nuts. Yeah. It was crazy.
I taught a class. I remember there was a student who was living in Singapore at the time. Mm-hmm. And I taught the class at 8 a.m. And for her, it was 8 p.m.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that wild?
That virtual life was crazy. That virtual life is crazy.
It has spoiled me, though. I can tell you, I love my house and I love not having to leave.
I hear that.
It has spoiled me. I have become not a recluse or necessarily, but I do love being at home.
Right.
Very much. And not having to do anything very much.
I hear that. Lisa, what has Black Women's Stitch meant to you? In growing this amazing community family that you have nurtured over such an amazing period of time, can you tell the audience what has that just meant to you in this process of just growing not only the podcast and not only the brand, right, but what Black Women's Stitch means to Black and Brown women who love this community?
And I thank you for that question. I think what it means for me will obviously be different than what it means for people who are seeing it from the outside.
Absolutely.
For me, it was a healing project. It was a way to heal myself and to build that which I needed.
Right.
I started the organization on the heels of some trauma after surviving a white supremacist terror attack in 2017. Mm. And I had done a lot of protesting and counter-protesting and teach-ins and lots of different activations around anti-fascist and anti-racist organizing. And after the traumatic event, which led to the death of one person, it was just a devastating time. Yeah. And so I made the mistake, and what I didn't know was a mistake at the time, of going to a quilt retreat. A quilt retreat is an event where about 20 to 30 people get together at a retreat center. There's tables set up, you bring your sewing machine, you bring your projects, and it's really a lot of fun. It's like a slumber party for grown-up women where you stay up all night and you're sewing and talking and laughing and snacking, and it's a really great time. I had been doing it with these women in particular for about 15 years. And this event was my last time sewing with this group. And it was because when I arrived, I was informed that Charlottesville was not to be discussed. Charlottesville is where I live and where the terror attacks took place. People were asking how I was. They had either seen me on the news, they had knew that I was involved. And you know, I say, well, it was terrible. It was, you know, a nightmare. We've still, you know, we woke up screaming for weeks. It was bad. And they asked me and I would answer, but I did not walk in with the thought of delivering any kind of lectures or talking about my experience, because this group, though they are nice people, they are older white folks with very conservative political views, as well as distinctly Southern conservative political views. So they love the Confederate flag. They don't see any harm in it. They say they see heritage, but do not understand how their heritage of white supremacy is also pretty hateful.
Right.
And so this was not the audience for that type of conversation.
Right.
But I, you know, I attended the event. The event went, you know, I kind of felt a bit uncomfortable, but, you know, I went on and made my quilt blocks and everything was fine. Then about a few weeks after this event was over, I get an envelope in the mail and it just has my name on it. And when I open it up, there is a check inside.
Oh, okay.
My
I was
check.
About to say, woo. Hey now.
No, there's a check inside right. that I have written to pay for the next year's event. They have returned my check to me as a sign of my unwelcome.
Not they returned now, the check.
Yes, they did. Well, shit, give me my money back.
Right, give me my money back.
Yeah, so like I was so first stunned. Wow. I said, you know, let me call the person that I think that I know just to get more info. Maybe the event was canceled and everyone's getting their check returned because I'm a big dum-dum like that. Because I couldn't imagine the alternative, which turned out to be the truth, was that this woman I talked to, she was like, well, I don't think that this person is prejudiced. I just think you broke the rule. The rule was that Charlottesville was not to be discussed and you discussed it. Now, I discussed it after people asked me things. I did not march in giving lectures and telling everybody because it was not something I really wanted to talk about at all. Mm-hmm. And certainly not with them. Mm-hmm. Not with them. I did not do a good job. And I'm very glad that this happened. I was, when I first was rejected from the event, the event that I was rejected from was a beach event where they meet up at the beach. And so I just started hosting my own, which have been beautiful experiences and everybody loves them. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. But I was so crushed. I felt like I had lost something that I loved. And that's when it hit me. That I would never again audition my humanity
Ooh.
In exchange for something that I loved.
Yes.
I love to sew. My grandmother sewed, my mother sewed, my grandmother sewed, my grandmother's grandmother sewed.
Yes.
I love it. And I will never again audition my humanity in exchange for something that I love. And it also showed to me that because I You got it recorded.
I gotta write that down. I ain't got no pen. I just had it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
You'll remember it. It came up at minute 42.
Okay. 42. 42 something. Okay. I got it. Go ahead. Go ahead, Miss. Go ahead, Lisa. You got it.
42-18. So, that's that podcast. It's like,
I
think
I said it at 42. I gotta write that one down. That was good, boy. That was good.
42-10. That's when I started, I think. But what is useful about what Black Women Stitch brought to me was the understanding that I could build what I need.
Yes.
And what I needed was to be held well mm-hmm. in the space that meant so much to me.
Yes.
And I realized that I had been doing this for about 20 years, 15 years with one group, 20 years with another group. Always either the only Black person at one group or mm-hmm. one of two, maybe three in another group mm-hmm. where there was close to like 30 people. So always in the deep minority.
Right.
And I wanted Black Women Stitch to be Black from a distance. I wanted people to know that I am a Black woman and I am talking to and centering other Black women. This doesn't mean that I am uninterested in what's happening with other folks who are not Black women. I have had Black men on the podcast, because the Black men who sew are designers, et cetera, artists. And also that as a Black woman, I get to want to be in community with Black women because that's where I feel safest. And that historically, that's where I have been safest. And I don't make any apologies for that. Absolutely. And what I've discovered is that there are other folks who have had similar experiences to mine or who just want to create in a community of women, of people who share their experiences, share their trajectory, and have had a sense of some of the same things.
Right.
Because as Black women, this country forces us to share experiences.
That is a fact.
Yes, ma'am. So the nature of what racism is and does. So thank you so much. Thank you. I'm so glad. Picky Girl Travels the World. She is fantastic. She has really been.
She said everywhere. Lisa's influence was key in me creating safe spaces for Black women. Can you talk to that a little bit, Lisa, before I get into a couple more questions really quick?
Sure.
Can you talk to the importance, and I've asked this multiple times, but I love the answers that I've been getting every time. Can you talk to the importance of Black women just in these spaces? Whether that's education, media, doctor, lawyer, it doesn't matter which profession, what space. Can you just talk to a little bit the importance of Black women just taking up space? How about that?
Absolutely. I think that having Black women in spaces of in key leadership and management roles, as well as structural support roles in large institutions, is always important, right? That we know that representation is useful. It's a way to build laterally, ways to build across different rankings. You know, absolutely. Like if you are a new professor, for example, it's really helpful to talk with other new professors.
Right.
And if the other new professors is a Black woman or a woman of color, that can be really helpful and beneficial. But I also want to retain the focus on Black women.
Yes.
And I would even turn your question in a kind of a slightly different way. Mm-hmm. I would say, it is important that Black women be in all variety of spaces. But what I find most helpful is when we are in space in and among each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the spaces that have been most restorative and healing for me have been the Black-centered, Black women-focused spaces.
Yes.
That allow us to come together without the white gaze. And I'm saying gaze, G-A-Z-E, without the white view, without the white oversight,
right.
Without male oversight either, that there's something about building spaces that allow us to fully inhabit ourselves without worry that we're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Absolutely.
One of the reasons I created Black Women's Stitch was I just basically wanted to have a sewing group without racist microaggression. Right. You would be shocked. You'll be shocked to learn how many racist microaggressions lurk in sewing and quilting communities. Maybe you wouldn't be shocked because these things happen in America, which is the land of microaggressions, but it becomes like so tiring. And we are all, and because it is so tiring, that is why it is necessary. Because we cannot and should not, in my mind, give our best to any institution that will replace us within 3 days of our death. Not you end up dead on Thursday, and on Monday, they got your job listed. They can replace you instantly. And yet we are encouraged to devote ourselves to these places as if they are our long lost best friends, you know?
Right.
And so institutions are designed to preserve themselves. That is what an institution is. It makes choices that strengthens the institution,
Right. Regardless
of the will of the people inside it.
Absolutely.
And
go ahead.
I want to build something for Black women, so this is one of the reasons I have the podcast as a way to have an archive of Black women creativity, mm-hmm. to have an archive of hundreds of episodes of us talking about sewing, quilting, design. I've talked to architects. I've talked to, I mean, all these folks are doing things with needle and thread. Right. Professional artists, student designers, designers who are fresh off New York Fashion Week and on their way to Paris. I've talked to actors, singers, actresses, like so many different people, connected by being Black women who sew. And that is Black women who stitch. And so I know I've been considering branching out a bit to include other needlework beyond, I tend to do the things that involve needle and thread, right, rather than hook and yarn or knitting needles, but all of that can definitely be included in this. But I do, I typically work with folks who do hand embroidery, machine embroidery, felting, tufting, like tufting rugs and stuff like that, quilting, and apparel sewing, home deck. So I have a long list, like Ruth Carter from the Black Panther, who got an Oscar for Black Panther. She is on my bucket list of someone to interview because I would ask, who would not want to talk to her?
Absolutely. You know, oh, you're right. She was right.
I have this other woman, it's called Art You Hungry, and she does these stunning embroideries for Disney and other places. And she's a young Black woman artist. So I'm just, I feel like the topic is inexhaustible because the excellence in Black creativity is inexhaustible.
Right. And I think that goes to you, Miss Lisa. That goes to you. That goes to, again, that goes
why am I in it?
Why, because that goes, everything you just said literally circles back to how your story started about the why.
Right. Yeah,
we always talk about when we have conversations, we always talk about why you started your brand, why you started this, why. And your story is so influential to the why, because
yes,
a certain group certainly. Of people did not see fit to have you in their group. So you said, okay, thank you for your time. I appreciate you. Well, I'm going to start this. Not only did you start it, you cultivated it. Then not only did you cultivate it, it started to grow, morph, become something probably bigger than what you thought maybe in your mind, right? Because it always happens like that. Trust me. Right?
It grows
bigger than what you think. And now you're like, whoa, what happened? And now we're sitting here, Miss Lisa, as a multi-time award-winning podcaster. We're like, that's where we are. So that group of women, huh? That group of women, huh? Okay. They sat there. They lost. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They lost. Take me through.
I can tell you.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Say, take you through where?
Take
you
me through. Because I know behind the scenes we talked about a lot, but take me through the first time you got nominated and then first time winning for Black. Because listen, when nominations came last year and a little bit of this year too for Stitch Please, I think anybody that knew Lisa was like, yo, yes, right? And when she won, we was like, yes! I don't know if Lisa, per se, and I'm going to say, I don't think she thought she was going to win for real.
I did not think
she knew she was going to win for real. But I knew in my heart of hearts she was going to win just by the level of community love that she gets, the people who love her, and the production of the podcast. It just what it is. Take me through a little bit about you just winning your first award.
So I won a Black Podcast Award
for best
shout out to the BPA for the best blurred podcast. And I was very happy for the category. Mm-hmm. I was happy that the category made. I think y'all who are listening might not realize that my podcast is a leisure slash hobby slash crafts podcast.
Right.
And those categories typically don't get a lot of shine.
Right.
They are even for the BPA as it was building its awards. They didn't have a hobby leisure category. There were other places that don't have a hobby leisure. There's many places do not have a hobby leisure category.
Right.
And so I was grateful that Blurred, because I am, as I said, a black nerd, and totally nerdy about sewing. And it was a way to let hobbyists, people who are interested in comics and shoe collecting and stuff like that. And then, so I was delighted for that. I was delighted. I was honored. I also won a Signal Award last year for the podcast.
Yes, she did.
I won Best Introduction in Podcasting from She Podcasts, and that was really an honor. So to have these accolades is a real privilege. It's not something that I take for granted. And it also just exposes or makes me ask the question, why are there not more Black hobby leisure podcasts?
Mm.
And what does this mean that not enough of us are living and thinking about leisure, and why so much of our life focus is geared toward the grind, the work, and extractive principles of capitalism? One of the great things about leisure is that it's all up to you.
Right.
You get to control your time. Right. You are in charge. Don't have to do anything anyone else is telling you. And so it made me feel a bit sad that there were not many Black leisure hobbies, Black leisure podcasts. I'm happy to say that since I started my podcast, there has been an Asian, it's called the Asian Sewist Collective. They started a podcast for Asian sewists around the Asian diaspora. There's another Black podcast that's sewing based called Seams, Dreams, and Small Business Things by Terrence Williams.
Nice.
He's wonderful. There's a third podcast that started maybe 3 months ago called The Audace Sew Tea, where Aronica Cole and Julian Collins dish tea about sewing. And so I'm just like, so we are out there.
Y'all,
you know, it's happening.
Absolutely.
It's happening. I'm so excited that there is and that there's more. But it does go back to that whole age old question that we have about Black folks. And it's like, when do we get to rest?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
But when do we get to enjoy our time without the expectation of, I don't know, being paid for it? You know what I mean? When do we get to just have the rest that we deserve?
No, you're right. Cause I love my leisure time as well.
Yes.
And that is a good question. And I would love, I'm going to talk to you after the show, but that is a question that I would love to talk about on a different note. Because
absolutely. I'm happy to talk to you.
When we talk about topics in podcasting, that's kind of that's my thing. So like, I definitely want to talk to you about that on another note. Last question for you, Ms. Lisa. What does Black women win mean to you? I ask this question to all my Black men that come on our show about what does Black men win, mean to them. So we always switch it up when we do our Black Women Win series. So what does Black women win mean to you?
I love this. Thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me. Thank you for the folks in the comments for your comments.
Absolutely. Shout out to everybody in the comments, man. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you very much. It's very good to see y'all. Thank you. Black, what does it mean to win? When I think win, I don't think about a ticker tape parade and people cheering and celebrating. When I think Black women win, what I envision and this might be a very basic thing. Mm-hmm. I envision us being able to be whole, free, welcome, invited as our whole, entire, true self. That is what Black Women Win would mean to me. That we get to, it is as the historian, there's a Black woman, Anna Julia Cooper. She is a well-known, from the turn of the century, one of the first Black women to get a PhD. And I believe it is her who said, when and where I enter, the whole of the Negro race enters with me. Ooh. When and where I enter, the whole of the Negro race enters with me. And what I would love for us is to remember that we keep us safe.
Yes.
That we have been in this country under more hostile circumstances with fewer resources, and we are still here. The win is for us to embrace our wholeness without apology, without caveat. That is how I believe we win, to be our whole, full selves, to be unashamed, to be unafraid. And to be whole and full is not to be perfect. It is just to be. And the last thing I'll end on, and this is a quote from one of my favorite writers, Kevin Quashie, has a book called Black Aliveness. And in it, he says, in an anti-Black world, Blackness is expected of Black people. In a Black world, being is all that is required. And I wish for all of us, for all Black people, to win by us simply being allowed to be and to rest in the being of us.
Come on, Lisa. Okay, let me tell you something. Let me leave off with this a little bit. I needed that personally because I have a job interview tomorrow, and so
I needed
to hear that in a sense. My nerves have been acting up all day, and I've never calm been down. This nervous about a job. So can I just say thank you for that?
You are very welcome. They'll be lucky to have you. Calm, breathe. Remember, you are not going in there alone. You are going in there with your ancestors. You are going in there with people who love and believe in you, and they'll be lucky to have you. And if they miss out, that's too bad for them.
Oh, well. So too bad, so sad. Miss Lisa, listen, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for your words and wisdom. Thank you for educating us. I felt like I love when I can just hang back sometimes and just let people who are smarter than me talk.
I don't know who that person is.
That's you.
I'm like, I don't know who that person is, but
No. See, listen, I know. I just have to step back sometimes, and I appreciate your authenticity, your wisdom, and just your light. You feel what I'm saying? I said it at the beginning of the show. Lisa is a big ball of light. When you meet her, when you see her, if you've ever met her, she brings that into every environment.
that she's in, and I love that because it's her authentic self. And I tell everybody, please just be your authentic self, whether it's liked or not. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And that exactly. is that is the most respectable thing that you can do. Lisa, can you just let the people know where they can follow you, where they can get Stitch Please podcast? We'll have the links all the links in the descriptions and everything. But where can the people follow you?
Absolutely. Again, thanks so much to my peeps in the chat. Thank you all so much for coming through from the Stitch Please page on Facebook and the Black Woman Stitch on YouTube. You can find the Stitch Please podcast wherever you get your podcasts. That includes Apple, Spotify. We are also an Alexa skill. So if you say, Alexa, play the Stitch Please podcast, it'll play it. You can also follow us on Instagram. That's where we are most active, on Instagram. And that's how you can find us. And if you're interested in more, my DMs are, I'm pretty open with my DMs and I do my best to respond. And Patreon, gang, gang, join the Black Women Stitch Patreon. We are in urgent need of growing funds. And I really do want to press on that more. And y'all, I just haven't had the time, but we absolutely need an additional, I think it was an additional like $1,500 to kind of help make payroll and do all this stuff, you know? And so it has been an incremental thing, but I can tell you right now, they are passing laws to prevent companies from helping Black people. I am not joking. That same folks who got rid of affirmative action at Harvard and other schools, they want to do that for anything that's helping Black people, including things like the Fearless Fund, a private entity that is helping Black women get venture capital, because Black women account for less than 2% of venture capital funding. Wow. And that to them is too much. They want us to have zero. So we are going to have to turn to community in order to keep the things that we love alive. And hopefully one of those things you love is Black Women Stitching the Stitch Please podcast. And we are great, great stewards of the resources we are given. So just know that when you support the Black Women Stitch podcast on Patreon, all of that money goes not to me, because I have a fiscal sponsor. The fiscal sponsor manages all of that. And that goes directly to pay the people that make the podcast possible. So thank you. Thank you.
Woo, woo. Give it up one more time, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Lisa Wolf. Okay, came in here, shut it down. You feel what I'm saying? Listen, Lisa, I thank you so much for coming into the podcast again. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. And to everybody else, thank you guys. So first of all, thank you all for coming into the live. You feel what I'm saying? I want to shout out to Lisa's Stitch Please podcast gang, the Stitch, the Black Woman Stitch gang. You feel what I'm saying? Gang, gang. Thank y'all for coming through. We appreciate y'all. To everybody else, y'all will be able to watch and listen to this everywhere on Wednesday on the Epic Echo Productions YouTube channel and on the Epic Echo Productions podcast network as well. All right. So just go over to our website at epicechopro.com. That is epicechopro.com, where you can listen to this podcast and others on our network. And we'll be back. Actually, we'll be dropping a doubleheader this week. Miss Lisa's interview will not be the only one we'll be dropping in the final week of a celebration of Women's History Month. So y'all stay tuned, because we got another one in store for y'all this week as well. All right. I love y'all. Y'all be easy. Stay breezy. And this has been another one. Y'all be peace, love, and hair grease. Y'all have a great week.